There's No Escape When War Turns Ghoulish by Donald G. McNeil Jr. He pictures of Nicholas Berg having his head sawed off may have been too horrible to look at, but the bearable ones accompanying them were nearly as upsetting, those of his father, Michael, crying in the arms of another son, David, after learning that the brutal act was there for anyone to see on the internet. For 200 years now, most fathers have learned of their sons' deaths in war from letters, telegrams, or a visitor in uniform climbing the steps of the front porch. Instead, on a lawn in Westchester, PA, the world saw a scene straight out of the battle for Troy, Priam breaking down after watching Achilles kill his favorite son, Hector, and drag his naked body around the city walls. Thanks to the internet, the atrocity was not run through a script doctor. It was neither heightened into docudrama by Homer, nor softened by a squeamish editor. Terror reached the terrified unedited. Meanwhile, the Islamic world was seeing something new, and yet somehow familiar. For the most historically imaginative, the pictures of mistreated prisoners of war from inside Abu Ghraib prison recalled the sight greeting Ottoman soldiers when they marched north in 1476 into Romania. Hundreds of their captured comrades spiked on poles along the roadside by Vlad the Impaler, the Christian prince who gave rise to the Dracula legend. Throughout history, all atrocities have been local and have cowed or inflamed those closest by. Displaying Caesar's body to the crowd, Mark Antony named the author of each wound. Rebels in Sierra Leone chopped off hands in each village they overran. With the projection of armies across empires and oceans, the emotive power of atrocities became the feedstock of propaganda and went global. But getting news of them back home to drum up army recruits or sell war bonds meant putting them through a series of filters: the time it took to get an image, the military censor, the cautious editor. When 1,300 British troops were disemboweled by Zulus in 1879, newspaper engravers had to invent the visuals. When British troops let 26,000 Boer women and children die of fevers and starvation in concentration camps from 1900 to 1902, they were exposed only through letters read out in Parliament weeks later. Such lapses in time and distance always raise questions about veracity. Japanese beheading of prisoners was well known in World War I. But legends grew up around it. A long dispute has lived, for example, about whether two officers in occupied Nanking, lieutenants named Mukai and Noda, really held a contest to see who could be first to cut off 100 heads, and whether a fellow officer wrote a ballad about their fine swords. It may have happened, it may have been an invention of Chinese propagandists. Many historical pictures exist of what are alleged to be Japanese beheadings, but some look very much staged. Even today's live film is screened in advance, tapes mysteriously delivered to Al Jazeera TV are watched before they are released, live pictures reaching CNN by satellite are monitored by a producer with a finger poised over a cut-off button. Now the terrorists have cached an idea from the playbook of General H. Norman Schwarzkopf and learned how to bypass the filters and go directly to the American people, said John R. MacArthur, author of Second Front, Censorship, and Propaganda in the Gulf War. The dissemination of the footage of Nick Berg's death, he said, was akin to General Schwarzkopf's handing out tapes of his smart bombs destroying targets without hurting bystanders, apparently irrefutable evidence of American effectiveness to be presented exactly as delivered. Mr. Burke's murder, his killer said, was in revenge for Abu Ghraib. But how they felt their cause was served by the sight of five masked men butchering a trussed-up victim is a mystery. Was it meant to intimidate Americans, or just to boast to other terrorist cells? Many Muslim commentators express shame at the deed. Even Hezbollah, which killed 241 American servicemen with a single truck bomb in Lebanon in 1983, expressed shock, saying the act did an immense wrong to Islam. John Keegan, a military historian and defense editor of the Daily Telegraph in Britain, said he expected the impact to be minimal. I think the average American will say, this tells me what I already knew, that the Islamic terrorist is a barbarian, he said. Something about small-scale atrocities, he argued, fails to haunt the viewer the way 1945 footage of legions of skeletons in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, or the sight of the World Trade Center falling. Also, the death of a lone victim always leads to personality profiles that often raise blame the victim doubts. What was Mr. Burke doing roaming Iraq, Jordan, and possibly Iran saying he was repairing antennas? How did he come into the hands of the Iraqi police and the FBI and find himself accused of being an Israeli spy by fellow prisoners? The events at Abu Ghraib are hardly morally equivalent, because the prisoners were humiliated, not killed, although there are reports that some died of torture. The pictures are squeezing through a series of filters, editors mask the nakedness, and some faces. More important, both the Defense Department and some congressional representatives are determined that the whole batch not be released. In this case, what is most frustrating, said the military historian Victor Davis Hansen, is that on the voyage from a shocked member of the 372nd Military Police Company to military investigators to the press, the context disappeared. These pictures really aren't worth a thousand words, he said. They remind me of the Girls Gone Wild videos. Do they always do that? Or is it something that happened because the cameras were around? The pictures were taken late at night, he pointed out, and the behavior of the soldiers in them is quite bizarre. They are not caught on camera waterboarding prisoners or using other tortures that have apparently been approved for top-level detainees. They are posing in the middle of quite odd actions, pointing to genitals, arranging naked bodies into living piles, holding captives on leashes, or in Ku Klux Klan-style costumes. Where did reservists who were trained more in controlling traffic than in running a prison learn such moves? Were pictures of humiliated Iraqis taken to intimidate future prisoners facing interrogation? Or were they personal trophies taken by out-of-control soldiers? For all their immediacy, the images are simply baffling. Page the script doctor.